Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro is laying the blame of recent widespread Amazonian wildfires on NGOs. Without presenting evidence or naming sources, he said NGOs are retaliating because they're mad that his government slashed funding to them. Many of the fires are burning in the Amazon basin, home to the world's largest tropical forest, a diverse ecosystem, and threatening tribes.
Making space friendly is mission critical if you want to take tourists all the way to the International Space Station, the Johnson Space Center in Houston, where NASA astronauts are training for the upcoming inaugural mission aboard Boeing's new Starliner spacecraft, which may one day take average adventurers into space. Among the preparations, plunging underwater and into this space station mock-up, otherwise known as the Neutral Buoyancy Lab, where astronauts simulate weightless spacewalks.
It's not visible to the naked eye, but this cup of water contains microplastics. You're potentially ingesting these microplastics every day, though, according to the World Health Organization, it's nothing to worry about. Yet. On Thursday, the organization released its first report on potential health risks associated with ingesting microplastics. There is limited data, they say, but so far, that data has been reassuring.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's August the 23rd. It's 5:10 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell. Another business day getting underway here. We're going to hit the numbers from the markets around the globe momentarily. We'll also keep you posted as we move through the hour here on the latest news, weather, sports, and traffic. So stay tuned for that. On the program today, our regular Friday guests are here. Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul will join our conversation momentarily this morning. Lots to talk about in the economy and about our portfolios as well. A little bit later in the program, Brian Summers will be here. He's the Senior Aviation Business Editor at skiff.com. Brian has a couple of really cool stories this week, one of them involving 737 MAX. Another of them involving American Airlines and their first-class cabin that might be getting yet another upgrade. So Brian will be with us at about 5:38 this morning. All of that coming up. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. The opening bell rings this morning after a fairly quiet day on Wall Street yesterday as investors await a speech from the Federal Reserve Chairman. Investors will be looking for signs of upcoming moves when Jerome Powell delivers comments at the Fed's annual symposium in Jackson Hole, Wyoming today. At the close yesterday, the Dow was up 50 points. The Nasdaq had gained 29. The S&P was basically unchanged this morning. Futures are pointing toward gains at 8:30 Chicago time. Dow futures are up 90 points this morning. S&P and Nasdaq futures are up anywhere from a third to a half a percent. As we look at the markets around the globe this morning, lots of green in Asia. The Nikkei ending the day up almost a half a percent. In Hong Kong, markets up by a half a percent. And in China, up by nearly a half a percent as well. And in London, markets up by nearly three quarters of a percent. The FTSE up 55 points. The DAX and the CAC are up as well, nearly a third to a half a percent in France this morning. And oil in the United States is at $55.26 a barrel, which is down about 9 cents. As we begin this morning, a couple of big stories. The founder and CEO of Overstock has resigned after admitting an affair with a Russian spy and making comments about so-called deep state investigations. Patrick Byrne resigned yesterday after nearly 20 years with the online discount retailer. Byrne said in a letter to shareholders that he had revealed last month he was involved in an FBI probe into investigations of Russian interference in the 2016 election. He also admitted having a romantic relationship with Maria Butina, a Russian citizen convicted of crimes associated with the 2016 election, including working as an agent for Russia. Overstock Chairman Jonathan Johnson has been named as the interim CEO of Overstock.com. Sacramento, California will be the first non-college campus to pilot food delivery robots. Kiwi robots have already been delivering food at some UC campuses and are said to be faster than delivery drivers, and they also avoid pedestrians. The Berkeley-based Kiwi Bots plans to introduce up to 30 robots in Sacramento over the next year. Of course, everyone around the country watching this as another test for potential robot delivery drivers all over the country. On the calendar today, we'll watch for new home sales, and we will also see whether or not, again, the Federal Reserve Chairman has anything to say about monetary policy. We'll keep you posted on that. More in the Outlook coming up a little bit later in the opening bell. But first, let's bring in Paul Nolte this morning. Paul is an SVP and Senior Portfolio Manager, Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul, good morning and happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you. Good morning.
Well, what's on your radar screen this morning? What do you want to...
Chair Powell is certainly it. I mean, you know, the title of his chat this morning is Challenges for Monetary Policy. So we're all expecting to hear more about maybe some of the limitations of monetary policy, maybe what the Fed might be doing with monetary policy. It's certainly, for a lot of investors, a follow-on to the Fed minutes that we got released earlier in the week. And what was interesting earlier in the week, we had, again, the rubber chicken circuit chats from the Fed officials, and they were talking a little bit more hawkishly that, you know, maybe this mid-cycle adjustment, the one rate cut that we did get, may be it, and they may sit on their hands for a little while. And that, again, is creating a little bit of volatility here in the markets as investors try to figure out, are we going to zero or are we going to kind of hang out here for a little while?
Yeah, you mentioned the chicken circuit. There was a couple of the Fed speakers, one in particular yesterday, really saying, I think we'll sit and really suggesting we're going to sit by the sidelines now.
Right.
And the minutes kind of showed that it was sort of a close vote on mm-hmm. whether or not last time they were going to go. So the challenge of monetary policy would be the huge pressure that Chairman Powell is under to do something, but also to not waste whatever resources could possibly come to bear in an actual recession.
Well, I mean, we realize now that the Fed has a whole new toolbox that they haven't had prior. Welcome to monetary policy following the Great Recession in 2008. So we can go out in the marketplace. We can buy bonds. There are actually two central banks, Switzerland and Japan, who are actually buying securities, buying stocks. So there are more tools than just we can cut interest rates. Whether they need to or not, the argument that we've been making is that monetary policy is not going to fix trade. And trade is really the underlying issue, and you hear it from companies. You see it in a lot of the data numbers that we look at, that trade is what is behind the global slowdown, and zero interest rates, negative interest rates, do not necessarily solve that problem.
The trade situation is one that has been mentioned in many earnings reports.
Mm-hmm.
We saw some manufacturing numbers yesterday that show contraction manufacturing factories for the first time in 10 years. Again, trade, the issue there. It just goes through every part of what we're seeing happening negatively is trade.
No, that's true. And part of what we've talked about, you know, really probably over the last 6 months or so, is that we've been moving down this path. You know, 6 months ago, 9 months ago, a lot of the economic numbers were still in good shape. So we had a lot of green flags flying, occasional yellow ones here. We have more yellow and occasional red, and we'd put the manufacturing number below 50 in the red category now. So there's other parts of the economy that are still doing well. Manufacturing right now is 30 to 35% of the overall economy. Services are a much larger part of the U.S. economy. We'll be very interested to see what comes out with the service sector. Retail sales as a whole are doing well. The consumer is still pretty healthy. So we're hopeful at least that the consumer can work their way through this and continue to be in good shape and continue to hold up at least the U.S. economy. But it's not the same when you look around the world. And we kind of wonder aloud, how long can the U.S. be an island when we're seeing slowdowns in Europe and Asia and so on? The U.S. right now kind of sticks out on the good side of the things.
Yeah, and we're referring to the IHS Markets Manufacturing Purchasing Managers Index report, which came out yesterday, 49.9 in August. below that 50 level, as you mentioned. There was also the story about the jobs numbers.
Mm-hmm.
The revisions that possibly are coming, nearly a half a million jobs that are fewer than we thought.
Yeah, and this is one of the series, along with GDP and some others, that normally get revised every year or every couple years. And so we've talked about, we'll get it in another 2 weeks. We'll get another jobs report, and it'll be the most important one of the recent history, as is always the case. But they have revised lower by a total of a half a million job growth. What we haven't seen yet is where that is all coming through. So they don't have the fully revised numbers. They have some very high level numbers. We'll get that in February. So we'll see what that looks like. But even taking that number out, we're still averaging about 185 to 190,000 new jobs each month, which is above what we need to keep the economy going. We need really about 160 to 170,000 new jobs just to absorb all the new entrants. The other thing that we look at is the weekly jobless claims numbers, and those continue to be near generational lows. So that's our confirmation, at least, that the jobs market, even with that adjustment, is still a pretty healthy market right now.
So, Paul, with all we've been talking about, monetary policy, interest rates, whether or not we're heading into a recession, this seems like a good question to ask. How have our portfolios changed? Any strategy change?
Well, when you take a look at the markets for the month of August, the markets are relatively unchanged. The market today is pretty much where it was on August 2nd. And it's gone sideways in a very interesting fashion. I mean, we've had 300-point down days, or 3% down days. We've had 300-400-point up days in that window. So it's gone nowhere over that period of time, over the 2-3 weeks. So as we've kind of talked about, because we think we're going down that recession path, we're not there yet, and the markets aren't going to go south immediately. But as the markets do go up, and we're looking at a nice day this morning, is to take a little bit of money off the table and put it into short-term treasuries or intermediate-term treasuries. Treasuries will provide you a good rate of return if the markets do decline. So we see on those days when the markets are down 1%, 2%, the treasury market does very well, because that's the safe haven. Everybody runs to those markets. So that will hold up well in that environment. We're seeing more pain in the international markets, certainly emerging markets. It's been one of our favorites because it is by far and away the cheapest market around the world. But trade is having a big impact on emerging markets, and they have suffered. So the U.S. continues to be the place to be. When you look at all the different asset classes, the S&P 500 is still the number one asset class. So we still have a very large holding in the S&P 500, but we're taking down some of the overall equity weights and increasing our fixed income weight in anticipation in the next year to 2 years that we're going to see some rough going in the equity markets.
Are there any stocks that are interesting to you right now?
You know, there's the markets, when you take a look at them and what's cheap in the marketplace. And a lot of people, when they look and say, well, you know, if things are going to go bad, I want to get defensive. I want to buy consumer staples, utilities, et cetera. Those tend to be very expensive right now because a lot of people have already done that. One of the areas that looks interesting to us is healthcare. Healthcare has been under siege for the last 10 years. And not necessarily the pharmaceutical stocks, but some of the other types of stocks like Amerisource, Brunswick, and some of those types of names that have a CVS, Walgreens, too, that kind of fit in that category of healthcare providers, at least to the ultimate consumer and pharmaceutical, not necessarily the pharmaceutical manufacturers, but the delivery companies that deliver those pharmaceuticals. The middlemen have been really squeezed here. But I think there's some value in there. Technology, surprisingly enough, as a whole, continues to be relatively cheap versus its historical averages. So very broadly, technology continues to be a good place. You're seeing good revenue growth, good earnings growth, and in some of those companies, very good dividends. So, again, broad exposure to technology we still like here as well.
Back to the healthcare issue, does that even filter down to, let's say, a Walgreens? Is that Walgreens a good buy?
Walgreens is very inexpensive here, CVS is as well, but they continue to be under pressure because, again, you know, when you look at drug pricing, they're the ones that get it as far as, you know, they're the ones I'm going to make the payment to. There's three or four companies that are in line behind Walgreens that are providing the delivery, so it's not a straight pipeline from Merck manufacturing right to a Walgreens. There's middlemen in there as well, insurance and so on. So those companies have come under pressure in this environment. And so you're looking at, with Walgreens at least, a company that's selling at 12 to 14 times earnings. Historically, it's traded up around 18 times earnings. So there's some room for it to go. They also have a very good history of raising their dividends and good cash flow. Surprisingly enough, they're actually closing some stores. CVS is as well. So they're starting to slow that expansion that they've been on for the last 30 years or so. It's a now a more mature market and a little bit more competition than what maybe they're used to. So again, the environment's a little tough, but that's usually where you can find some good values as long as you're being a patient investor.
Yeah, and we're also seeing the companies like Walgreens partner with other companies. So that we saw, I believe it's Kroger that's going to partner with Walgreens so that we'll see more grocery items perhaps. The two sharing that space is interesting.
Yeah, and unfortunately, when you look at grocery and you look at grocery stores like a Kroger, their margins are extraordinarily thin. So, you know, there's a lot of sales that go through the grocery store, but their margins, they don't make a lot of money on the grocery items. So, again, for a company like Walgreens to get into that grocery business, it's not one that's going to add huge amounts to the bottom line. But what it does do is, I got to run out and get a gallon of milk. I don't have to go to the grocery store. Walgreens is close by. I can at least do that while I'm out. Right. So from a convenience factor, absolutely.
All right, Paul, how can people get a hold of you and have a one-on-one if they want?
Well, they want to chat on their portfolios or 401ks or financial planning in general. They can email me at pnolte@kingsviewam.com, and we can continue the conversation there.
Well, good. We appreciate you coming in. As always, have a great weekend.
You too. Thank you.
Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul's an SVP and Senior Portfolio Manager, Kingsview Asset Management, Chicago.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. We'll turn our conversation now to the business of aviation and travel. Joining us this morning via Skype from Los Angeles, Brian Summers, who's senior aviation business editor for skiff.com. Brian has a couple of really good stories this week about not only first class and American Airlines, but the 737 as well. Brian, let's begin with 737 MAX report this week that some of the airlines, even though this airplane is still grounded, are still booking passengers on the 737 MAX. What's going on here?
Yeah, Steve, you know, this is my life, so I don't find it as unusual as most people do. We have all read in the news, right, that a lot of airlines have canceled all their MAX flights until either November in some cases or January in other cases, right? They've come out and they've said that. So depending on the airline, after November, after January, these airlines are still planning to fly the MAX. And so that's why if you go to Air Canada's website or you go to American's website and you're looking to book something, say, next February or next April, those airlines are planning to fly the MAX, and you're going to see the MAX as an option to fly on whatever date you want. Again, it doesn't strike me as that unusual. I know people see that word MAX and they get nervous, but it is what it is. When they say we're only canceling our MAX flights until November or January, it means after November and January that they intend to fly the airplanes, and the airplanes are scheduled. I mean, I guess that they could just kind of take them off the schedule to make people more at ease, but they're not doing that.
It should be something, though, if you are booked, let's say, on a flight that's a max flight, let's say in December. I know there's I saw a couple of American Airlines passengers who said they were booked on December flights. You should probably be prepared for a cancellation or changed flight, don't you think?
Yeah, you know, this stuff is really complicated, though, Steve. Just because you're booked on a max flight in December does not mean that your flight is actually going to be canceled. What's just as likely to happen is that at some point in the next couple of months, you'll log into AA.com for American Airlines and you'll see, you know, my flight is on time. It's normal, but they've substituted another aircraft. So, you know, every month when they go in there and they redo the schedule, they're moving aircraft around and that sort of thing. So it's not like they cancel every single max flight. You may be on a regular airplane now, a non-max, and find your flight is canceled because they moved your aircraft to another flight. It's so complicated and it's hard to game the system. So you might as well just book the flight you want and see what happens.
There's another really cool story out there. Qantas Airlines testing how much the human body can withstand on the world's longest flight. Tell us what Qantas is doing.
Yeah, you know, Qantas keeps saying that by 2022, which is not very far from now, they want to fly from Sydney, Australia, to London and New York. Believe it or not, this is one of the last frontiers in aviation. I mean, you can fly nonstop between almost any two major cities in the world, but not Sydney and New York. You can do Sydney and Houston. You can do Sydney and Dallas, but that's about as far as you can go right now in the United States. So Qantas said this week that they're going to test this. They're basically going to use empty airplanes or almost empty airplanes with about 40 passengers and try to simulate what this will be like. People may know that an airplane that's light, that doesn't really have passengers, that doesn't have cargo, will be able to fly much farther. So they're going to have these 40 people on board. They're kind of going to be guinea pigs, and Qantas is going to test, you know, how their bodies react, that sort of thing. Now, I will back up here, Steve, and say that this is probably a bit of a public relations ploy. You know, people right now are handling almost 19-hour flights from Newark, New York, or the Newark, New York area to Singapore. Look, they're going to be able to handle 20 or 21-hour flights from Sydney to New York. But Qantas is getting a lot of free media on this, including me talking about it on the show. So good for them. That's part of the game, right?
Yeah, it is. You're right. Absolutely. But it is intriguing because I don't know that we've had medical tests being performed while people are on a plane. So to see this like happening in real time, that's kind of an interesting part of this.
Yeah, it will be interesting to find out what they learn. I will tell you that Qantas likes to share some information about their flights, and they've already put sensors on people, and they already have a flight from Perth, Australia to London, which is very far. It's about 18 hours. And I was talking with Qantas's jet lag guru last year. This is real. And they put sensors on people, and they noticed that some man on one flight who had a sensor on him never got up for 18 hours. And this is kind of a joke that they're all telling at Qantas headquarters. Like, how is that even possible? But they claim that they have the data. They checked to make sure that the sensor was working, and the guy did not get up.
Brian, since the last time we talked on last Friday, Cathay Pacific Airlines has had some real big changes in the wake of these Hong Kong protests. What's going on?
Yeah, Cathay Pacific is such a historic, storied airline, but it is not in great shape right now. They've gotten caught up in a bit of a mess, some fallout from these protests, these pro-democracy protests that we've seen in Hong Kong. So at the end of last week, beginning of last week, its CEO and its number two executive were forced to resign. You know, China is very interested in what's happening at Cathay Pacific Airlines, and China has basically asked the airline to make sure that employees who protest do not sort of fly through or over China or to China. And so the airline is doing damage control right now, and it's telling its employees that not only can they not protest, but they can't put certain things on social media. And, you know, no employee wants to hear this stuff from their company. And so I think employee morale is not great. at Cathay Pacific. And, you know, this is just an airline with a great history going back to the 1940s. So it's a shame to see what's happening there. And the airline has also said on a financial level, it is not doing as well as it should, right? Because if you're in Chicago and you're planning a trip to Hong Kong, you may call Cathay and say, look, I don't like the pictures I'm seeing on the news right now. I'm going to postpone or cancel my flight. And even people who are just connecting in Hong Kong, maybe they're going on to Vietnam or they're going on to Bangkok, they're not sure that they want to connect in Hong Kong. And I don't see how this is going to resolve itself. I mean, I assume eventually it will. But right now, it's just tough times for this airline.
And one of the stories that you've written is about first class on American Airlines getting classier.
Yeah, getting classier. That's one way to put it. Look, American Airlines kind of admitted this week just to me that it made a mistake with a new first class cabin. I mean, I know that a lot of customers out there know that economy class is getting worse. What people probably don't realize is American Airlines made its new domestic first class on some planes really not very good. They put in a seat that hadn't really been thought through. So there's nowhere to put your bag underneath the seat. On a lot of planes, there's no USB power. Even though there's USB power in economy class, there's no cup holder. There's just a lot of things that are so basic that every airline has them. American didn't say why they put in a subpar first class seat, but they did. And so customers have complained, and they've really complained. And it's important when people fly first class, right? This is a lot of money to the airline. So people think, right, the airline isn't listening to me. They don't care about me. When American got all these complaints from first class customers, they did listen. And so this week they came out and said, we are going to fix these seats. You know, we're still going to use the same seats, but we're going to find a way to get underseat storage. We're going to add USB power. We're going to add a cup holder. We're going to add an iPad holder. We're going to fix all the mistakes that we made with this seat. So, you know, if you fly first class out of Chicago, you will notice this eventually. I think they're going to start making the changes next spring. So that's good.
Yeah. They wanted to wait till the summer travel season was over, didn't they?
Well, Steve, you've opened up a can of worms here. It's actually more complicated than that, if you can believe it. Anytime you touch an airplane, you need certification from the FAA, and you can't get it that quickly. So American basically says that even though these changes are minor, they don't think that they're going to be able to get certification from the FAA until the spring. So what they're actually going to do is they're going to continue retrofitting these airplanes in the fall with the bad first class seat. And then in the spring, when they get FAA approval, they're going to go in and switch the seat back. Everything just takes a very long time in aviation, and it's more complicated than it needs to be. But I suppose safety is the name of the game.
All right, Brian, thank you. Great conversation as always.
Thank you, Steve.
Brian Summers of Skift.com. Make sure you follow Brian on Twitter as well at Brian Summers and Skift at Skift on Twitter.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening gains later on Wall Street. Dow futures are up 41 points this morning. NASDAQ futures up nearly a quarter of a percent. Same story over at S&P. S&P futures up about a quarter percent as well. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities now. Orion Samuelson is with us this morning. Good morning, Orion.
And good morning to you. And in the grain market overnight, we're looking at slightly lower prices in wheat and corn futures, while soybeans are just slightly higher. Really not enough change to even mention in the overnight grain trade. We're still waiting for definitive word on what happened in the White House yesterday as the president met with Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue and the chief of the Environmental Protection Agency, and they were meeting to discuss the really upset farmers about the exemptions granted to oil refineries in the program that's administered by the Environmental Protection Agency. No final word on that yet, and we're still waiting for final word on the crop tour results that have been going on this week. They ended yesterday in Minnesota, and we're looking for reports from there. Meanwhile, today is day number two of the Half Century of Progress show in Rantoul, Illinois. That goes through Sunday. Today is opening day of the Minnesota State Fair at St. Paul, and that goes through Labor Day. So we still have a lot of activity underway.
Yeah, and Orrin, we're still waiting on the Chinese to buy more agriculture products like they said they would.
Well, they did buy yesterday. Not much, but they did buy yesterday, and some for soybean deliveries this marketing year, and one contract for delivery in the next marketing year. But they're not buying anywhere near what they said they were going to buy.
So back to the conversation you were having about the president and the ag secretary yesterday, there is a little bit of concern about whether or not that fuel program is going to go the way that farmers want it to go.
Well, they probably are more upset by that situation than anything I've seen recently. I mean, the China-U.S. trade war has been going on for a while, but this exemption that the EPA is giving to small refineries to help them get over the expense of having to add biofuels to gasoline, that exemption program has just infuriated farmers, and they have been bombarding the White House with emails and with letters, and not only individuals, but farm organizations like the Illinois Farm Bureau.
All right. Orrin, thank you very much. Have a great weekend.
And you do the same, my friend.
Orrin Samuelson, make sure you listen to the morning show tomorrow morning at 5 right here on 720 WGN. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Friday, August 23rd. New home sales for July coming today. We're also expecting the Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell to speak at that symposium in Wyoming on the earnings calendar today. Foot Locker, Red Robin Gourmet Burgers, and The Buckle. So just a few things that could move the markets on this Friday, August the 23rd.